Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, our special guest is Supervisory Special Agent Richard Ryan with the FBI. Mr. Ryan supervises a cadre of special agents and detectives from various law enforcement agencies throughout Southern California. Mr. Ryan oversees white-collar crime in L.A. to include financial institution fraud, money laundering, and identity theft task force. During his career, he successfully worked major frauds, counter-terrorism, gangs and criminal enterprises, syndicates, organized crime, narcotics. In 2009, Mr. Ryan was deployed to Haiti for the search and rescue of U.S. citizens being held hostage for ransom. Mr. Ryan, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
And it sounds like we're going to be discussing one of the calmer aspects of your career. And I mentioned that off air, and you said you'd be surprised.
You would be surprised at the element that is engaging in mortgage fraud and bank fraud these days. It's not just a homeowner looking to get out from underneath their home or someone looking to prey upon a few dollars in equity on someone's property. It's a little more deep than that sometimes.
I read the 2009 fraud report, and there it made a differentiation between fraud for ownership and fraud for profit. Mm-hmm. Can you describe, you know, it seems like fraud for ownership was going to kind of be exonerated and fraud for profit was going to be concentrated on. Is that accurate?
Well, there are two different types. There's possibly more different types as well, but I'm familiar with what you spoke of. Bottom line is any criminal activity, especially mortgage fraud and bank fraud here, which will kind of be one and the same for the context of this conversation, is involving profit. Now, home ownership or de-home ownership, getting out from underneath someone's problem, someone who might be underwater in their property a few hundred thousand dollars and need to walk away, I think could be the biggest differentiation for this interview here.
When you say de-ownership, is there fraud that's somehow a participant in that process?
Absolutely. In this day and age, when we have millions of homes in foreclosure, pending foreclosure, or in short sale status, people need to get away from their property for whatever reason it might be, unemployment, getting into a loan they should not have gotten into originally, or being in a fraudulently obtained loan from years past when lenders, unfortunately, were engaging in that no documentation loans. So people are getting out from underneath their homes in a variety of reasons, and not only the homeowners, but individuals prey upon those people in that state.
So you have, groups of people that are foreclosure rescue specialists. So,
and that's a huge problem right now, the foreclosure rescue schemes. Also, hand-in-hand go the loan modification program schemes.
Now, by and large, are they legit, or is it kind of fraught with problems like that?
Well, by the time they get to our hands, they're probably not legitimate. Now, keep in mind, there are some companies who are really out there to help the individual who may have lost their job, who may be in financial trouble for one reason or another, and absolutely there's some programs out there to help them. A lot of those programs are sponsored by not only the federal government, but the state government as well, and I'd urge those people to look into that avenue before seeking out any individual who might be advertising in the Yellow Pages or in their local newspaper or the Penny Saver, things like that.
And I think one of the key aspects would be there wouldn't be a charge for the services that you mentioned first from the government, where there probably would certainly be a charge from a private.
Absolutely. And we would look at what those charges are, what these individuals are charging for. When are they charging? Are they charging on the onset when somebody signs up? Or do they bill the person after they've actually done them a service? And that's a big differentiation between the two.
I was listening to a radio advertisement, and I just was surprised by the boldness of the statement. It basically said that if you're trying to do a loan modification without us assisting you in preparing your financial statement to look correct, you're probably not going to get your loan mod. And I thought, well, what does that mean?
Well, that's a complete fallacy, and what they're doing is preying upon the emotions of people who are already in desperate straits, people who might be two, three, 4 months plus behind in their loan payments to their bank. So they're looking at the desperate and preying upon those individuals to say, hey, we can throw you a lifeline. Only us can do this.
Right.
We're the only ones here to help you. send us your money and we'll help you out.
Well, you know, back in the day when you're trying to get a loan, let's say stated income loans between 04 and 06, exaggeration was prescribed often by the lender. Now, when you're doing a loan modification, you're almost on the other side of the spectrum, maybe even tempted to downplay your financial status to where you can get a loan mod.
Yeah, very ironic, and that's a great statement. And along with that difference of statements of assets and things right now also comes along a completely different and evolving trend in mortgage fraud, such as under-evaluating properties in order to flip it with a higher appraised value at a later point to make a greater profit.
Okay, let's talk about that since that's near and dear to my heart, in our industry's heart, because we do buy houses. And I know there's, I saw some charts where the FBI tracked one-day flips, 30-day flips, 60-day flips. And one of my business models is that we buy at the courthouse steps and we pay cash and then we'll resell the property. So I know you know that there's legitimate businesses that do that. What you're talking about is a team, again, sort of getting in a position to where they're appraising something below what it's worth and presenting that package to a lender?
That's precisely it. Now, you have to have what we call a conspiracy sometimes when any time there's two or more individuals engaged in a criminal activity with a common goal. So this conspiracy would not only involve the current homeowner who wants to sell or short sell their home, but it's also going to involve an appraiser who's going to give a below market value appraisal to this property. So these folks will get this short sale through the bank-approved sale in which the bank will take less than what is owed on the property. Sometimes there's this conspiracy to very much underestimate the price of this property, get it at a great deal, and then go ahead and sell the property then at a profit at what may be the actual market value.
Now, sometimes, and this is great that we have somebody on our program that understands that maybe that same process can be done legitimately as well. You might be able to buy something that's a wreck, do work on it, and turn it inside of a reasonable time frame for a very different number, and nothing was done incorrectly. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, and that's what we would hope would happen.
Okay.
Because you have a lot of benefit to taking a property that might be blighted, be vacant for a while, perhaps the yard isn't mowed, it's becoming deteriorating or rotting, perhaps the pool in the backyard is turning green and is just a mosquito and fly zone. Somebody could come in, take very good care of this property and get it at a great deal, fix it up, turn the neighborhood around, increase the property and the comps for all the neighbors, and turn around and make a profit. And absolutely, that's the right thing to do.
Okay. One of the other things that happens, too, is the lender that owns that property, or they don't own the property and they actually don't want to if it's in the short sale process, is there's times where you have a retail buyer attempt a short sale and their loan doesn't get approved. And that happens two or three times. And then a cash offer comes in for a perfectly repaired house. It's at a discounted price, but the lender is tired of going through the drill of a failed escrow. So discounts can happen because it's just an easier transaction as well. And you can have a very quick price change from what was bought at all cash and what was sold at, and it still would be legitimate. I guess I'm just pointing out that there can be legitimate transactions that may appear to be oddly separated by a price, but there might be a very good reason for it.
That's absolutely true. And keep in mind, banks are not in the business of owning and maintaining properties. You know, they have to pay not only insurance, they have to pay taxes, they have to pay for the upkeep of the property, and they're not in the business of doing that. And if a bank, in their financial reasoning, wants to get rid of a home at whatever price they deem is in the best interest of the bank, might be a great deal. Absolutely, they're legitimately able to do that. And if a homeowner or soon-to-be homeowner or business is looking to acquire these properties, absolutely that's fair.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that sometimes you have a conspiracy, a kind of a team of participants, and you mentioned that sometimes the owner's one of them. Typically in a short sale, no matter what the price is, was my understanding they weren't going to get a dime anyway. Now, I just wondered how do they participate in the process if they're a conspirator?
Well, in a legitimate arm's length transaction for a short sale, that's absolutely right. Someone needs to sell their home for whatever unfortunate reason there is. Now, not oftentimes, but sometimes we see properties in which the homeowner is a conspirator along with somebody selling, buying the property. Could be a straw buyer, could be a company that's looking to purchase this property from the individual, but then the individual might have the opportunity to buy this property back from them at whatever price is predetermined. And then, but keep in mind, this is not let known to the bank or the lending institution. That would be deemed not an arm's length transaction if the bank does not know the true meaning and reason behind this sale.
Well, maybe we should talk about the definition of fraud, because that gets at the heart of probably all of the stuff we're going to discuss. At what point is there fraud?
Well, fraud is going to occur if there is skirting of any of the reporting requirements to the bank, if you're putting false or less than legitimate information down on the loan application, if you are engaged or providing kickbacks to anyone in order to get a benefit, such as an appraiser or a notary who needs to have an ID and a thumbprint, if you're providing them any type of compensation other than their ordinary fees in order for an individual or individuals to gain a profit.
Okay. Does fraud change? I guess what I was going to ask was, in, say, years like the boom years, 2004, 2006, is fraud more prevalent in those years or in tough years like 2011?
Well, I think there is always going to be fraud, and there always has been fraud. Fraud definitely morphs or changes as to the conditions and the environment of the day. Now, there was fraud back then in terms of purchasing properties at undervalued prices and then going ahead and selling them at a short time later for exorbitant profits. Nothing wrong with selling for a profit. However, if it's done legitimately, that's one thing. Illegitimately, that's another. Now, like I said, based on the environment and the times, such as today's economic situation, fraud changes.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have short sales back when people were making double-digit profits every single month back in 06, 07.
No one even knew what the word meant.
Exactly. And banks seem to be handing out loans pretty prevalently, sometimes, unfortunately, to individuals that didn't even qualify. Now we're seeing with the environment, the foreclosure rates, the short sale rates, the vacancies in properties. So there's definitely crime that's changing. And one thing is very interesting that I've seen in the past few months is a squatting scheme that's going on. And I don't know if you've heard about this or not, Bruce, but squatting is finding vacant properties in which an individual or individuals will simply break into, change the locks, and sit in that nice property rent-free, contact the bank, and tell the bank that they will get out of that property if they send them $25,000. They'll be out in 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bank? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, our business model, we buy vacant houses or we buy at the courthouse steps.
Uh-huh.
And not only are we in danger of having that, one of the things that is completely going unpunished is an occupant owner who's lost their house through not making payments, who decides to dismantle the property and decide that the cabinets and everything else is theirs. You cannot really prosecute that criminally. No one cares.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Unfortunately, that does happen. Now, let me talk to you about another emerging trend.
Okay.
When it comes to these types of situations. You might have somebody who's filing bankruptcy or having bankruptcy filed for them, unbeknownst to them, by the foreclosure rescue schemers.
Okay.
These folks might go in and completely strip the home of faucets, anything of value, refrigerators, piping, copper piping. Copper is at a premium these days. And we see this. If somebody's in bankruptcy, legitimate or not, and going in and stripping this and selling it for profit and not filing this profit for, or income rather, for the bankruptcy trustee, this is a fraud. And it happens, unfortunately, pretty regularly.
Yeah, it does. And it seems to be one of those things really hard to prove. And you just, I think the times that it's happened to us, which has been more than a few, you just resign yourself that you're going to take your lumps on that. And I know that there's other things everyone has to do and look at. And that kind of brings up a point. In 2004 through 06, the lenders were complicit in the participation of people that shouldn't have gotten loans. We actually had an event one time where I was interviewing a lender in front of an audience. And I asked this question. I said, where did the stated income number come from? And without batting an eye, she said, oh, we just made it up. So you have people, a lot of times you have people sitting in front of lenders, they're just wanting it to happen. And that kind of happened. And I guess my question is, in the FBI's pursuit of fraud, are there big players that are under scrutiny that really caused, you know, billions of losses at a time rather than 100 grand at a time?
Sure. And some of those players, as you say, perhaps have gone under receivership of the FDIC because they couldn't stay afloat, or they packaged loans and sold them to Wall Street, and then those non-performing loans were then given back to the bank, in which they can't purchase back. I want to say, and don't quote me on this, but about 200 banks last year went into FDIC receivership. They closed down because, you know, I would venture to say most likely something to do with their loan process.
And is that usually what happens, is once the FDIC takes over a lender, there might be an investigation going backwards and seeing, okay, what went wrong here?
Very much. And the FDIC is also a federal investigating agency, too. They have special agents assigned for that very, very potential criminal activity, if there is that involved.
Now, I did notice there was a recent case where there was quite a fine and I think some sentencing, and it was insider fraud. So is insider fraud, you know, actual participants in the management of the bank doing things that help themselves? Is that also part of fraud that's common?
Definitely. Not always, but definitely is part of the fraud. It might not only be management. It might be someone simply a loan, an underwriter with the bank.
Okay.
It could be a loan processor at the bank who might be getting a kickback from somebody who's trying to get this loan pushed through. So there's fraud at all different levels. It's not just the folks on the street who are trying to make a quick buck. Sometimes it's institutionalized. Sometimes there's a bad employee within the bank or the lending institution. So when you ask, is fraud increasing and where is it? It is all over the place, Bruce. You know, it keeps us in business, that's for sure.
It would seem to me that when I've talked to people that think they're dreaming up something new, you know, they've got a particularly hard solution or problem they want to get creative with, you know, and I'll sometimes be the person they run stuff by. I say, you know, that's you can't do that. And one of my statements is the FBI has that playbook. And I think for the most part, you have seen most of this repeat over the decades. And I know that, you know, if I talk about straw buyer, you know that lingo.
Correct.
And, you know, how do you know that lingo? Is that because you sat down with people that are in trouble and say, okay, we'd like to know how this works?
Right. Individuals who have purchased homes that not one single payment was made on, that we go out and we interview those people. Well, it might be somebody on title. However, they have no idea that they're on title. Maybe they were told that they would be paid $10,000 just to use their name to obtain a loan, but their name will not be attached to that whatsoever. They may or may not be knowledgeable about exactly the properties that they might own. I've talked to individuals that own 30 or 40 properties. They didn't know they owned a single one of them, unfortunately.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
So these straw buyers, very prevalent and very necessary sometimes in certain schemes, may or may not be complicit. Oftentimes they're paid a stipend for their services or for their identity and their credit score. Other times they may be victims of identity theft. And identity theft really is a very important aspect and a changing method in fraud these days.
You mentioned off air the organized crime factor. When you start having 40 loans to one person, first of all, I think that probably was very possible in 2006 because the lenders simply didn't seem to care. I doubt in 2011 you could pull that off, but organized crime is still prevalent in this arena of mortgage fraud.
It is, and when I say organized, I mean a group of people. It doesn't necessarily have to be a nationality, but a group of people who are engaged with a common goal and in this instance is mortgage fraud and bank fraud. We've had groups and companies purchase hundreds and hundreds of homes out of from underneath people, unbeknownst to the true and actual homeowner. They'll find somebody who has owned their home outright for years. And there's a case going on right now, actually, here in Los Angeles, in which an individual who owned their home outright had their home put on the market and had bids placed on this home. The purported homeowner was actually a criminal involved in a group of other folks engaged in this throughout the city and Southern California, in which they were posing as the real homeowner and taking the money out of escrow and actually going through with the sale of the property. When you go to interview the real homeowner, they have no idea what was going on whatsoever.
And now, were these owners usually not in the in that particular house? It was like a rental or a vacant, or they were actually in it sometimes?
Both.
Oh, my
Most
goodness.
Likely it's a rental property,
okay.
An income-producing property, and people would actually put their home up for sale, or the subjects would put the home up for sale by owner, and they'd start getting interest from real estate agents, legitimate real estate
sure.
agents. To purchase the home. Sometimes they'd sell this home two or three times before the banks actually got caught up and the county or the registrar's office got caught wind of this. So
wow. Yeah. Huh. Well, when the FBI is looking at someone for fraud, would that person be aware that they were under scrutiny, or is it done pretty secretly?
Typically, we do our investigations, conduct our investigations fairly covertly. We don't want people to, you know, run, go into hiding. We don't want folks to get wind and start altering documents. But the nice thing about, if there is a nice thing about mortgage fraud and subsequently bank fraud, is you can't change the paper trail. Once those documents are filed, you and I both know it's almost impossible to unfile those documents. So once the paper is filed, the bank has signatures, the money has been dispersed, whether it's through wire or however, there's a trail, and that trail it cannot be changed.
I would think that there must be a lot of people that feel after two or three years has passed, they almost forget that they even did it, and then all of a sudden one day a door knock happens.
This is true. And keep in mind, about nationwide, we have about 300 investigators, and that's special agents with the FBI that are dedicated to mortgage fraud and bank fraud. So if you think about how many millions of potential fraudulent loans, fraudulent transactions went through, forged grant deeds, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just so overwhelming, and we're limited with our resources. But I tell you, we will be knocking on your door at one point.
Now, there's about a little over 3,000 current cases, is that correct, or investigations?
I think that's about right, Bruce.
Okay. Now, are the majority of these for a fairly large dollar amount? Is that how somebody would increase their odds of a problem as they did something on a large scale?
Yes and no. If you look at the places where there is a lot of foreclosed properties, a lot of the cases stem from, for instance, California. I think it's the number one location for mortgage fraud cases. Tampa, Vegas, and Arizona are also large. But the property values in California are substantially higher than they are in the other states I mentioned.
Yes.
So, you know, it might not be apples to apples when we talk about large dollars because the property values vary from location to location. However, the agents in Oklahoma City might have one or two properties that are subject to investigation, and those properties might only be $150,000 or $200,000 versus a property here in Los Angeles area or Southern California or California as a whole, you know, properties could be in the millions.
Sure. Even on a single house, you could have a lender take a $500,000 hit, and probably often they do.
Absolutely. And when you look at equity as well, it's all relative. When the equity is built up in these properties, the prevalence for equity skimming or equity fraud or home equity line of credit fraud goes up exponentially as well.
Well, Richard, I really appreciate your time today. We've been speaking with Richard Ryan, Supervisory Special Agent with the FBI. And Richard, I really appreciate you taking time today to talk with us about the problem of fraud. And thanks for sharing some of the specifics about how we can do it wrong and right as investors.
Well, I thank you for your time. And if there's any questions, anyone can get a hold of me at any time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.